This is lecture 9 of the lecture cycle by Rudolf Steiner entitled Initiate Consciousness. Lecture 9 is entitled Abnormal Ways into the Spiritual World and Their Transformation. You have seen that in these discussions, we took as a point of departure the investigation of a state in the ordinary life of the present time, the investigation of dream life, and how we were able to proceed from this point to the explanation of different states of consciousness in the human soul that are capable of entering into other worlds than this which we live through between birth and death. You have seen that we arrived at the mediumistic consciousness, the consciousness that leads a person, I may also say, into a condition of somnambulism. For the mediumistic state is always somnambulistic. Now, both these sorts of experience, the dream experience and the somnambulistic, are indeed inner states of the soul that are always present in the right character in normal life also, and that lead one into true or false channels only when they are intensified. Let us today, once more, observe the dream life. We have seen that a person experiences the dreams of ordinary consciousness when he passes out of the waking state into the state of dreams, and there continues in his astral body the after quiverings of what he has passed through in his ether body and his physical body during the waking state. Then arise the chaotic, though wonderful, experiences of dreams, whose interpretation, however, is really possible only to the initiate, since their usual chaotic condition confuses one who does not penetrate more deeply into the nature of the spiritual world. But we have seen also how this fabric of the dream life may, by means of meditative and concentrative exercises, be woven through by a real and higher consciousness. You must therefore imagine a man placed in the midst of this wonderful chaotic world of dreams, but this dream life flooded with consciousness, so that one is just as clear-headed about it and also just as much in the midst of reality therein as is the case in ordinary life. We then see into another world, that very world to which I have introduced you, where it was possible to accompany the dead after their death. And we feel as if we were spread out in a world far more real than that in which we are at present. Now the question is this: into what world do we really enter? In regard to this also I have already spoken. Just now I will simply touch upon the matter once more from another point of view. Together with earthly humanity, there lived once, as I have said, great leaders of mankind who were not in physical bodies, but only in finer etheric bodies, who could, however, incorporate themselves in air. These gave instructions to men by way of inspiration and founded the primeval culture of the earth. One who looks back into ancient times by means of the requisite state of consciousness finds these great spiritual primordial teachers of humanity moving among men. These great teachers of humanity have withdrawn to the moon. They are to be found at present only in the moon sphere, and have there taken into their service all sorts of beings that have never been on the earth. They live among such elemental beings, and they exert their influence upon men especially when they have passed through the gates of death, making intelligible to a man how he must conduct himself in relation to his karma, etc. It is with these beings that we have to do also when first we wish to enter into the spiritual world. Just as we can accomplish our life on earth only with men, in society, in social union with men, so also we can accomplish the life in higher knowledge only in company with other beings. And with these beings, with these moon beings, who I may say have developed from earth beings, from those primordial teachers of humanity, and also with those beings whom they have taken into their service, it is together with these that we investigate the spiritual world that is in immediate contact with our own. It is in this world, then, that we always find the basic facts also for learning to know the earlier incarnations of men, for going backward into earlier earth periods, in order to discover personalities who have lived at earlier times and with whom we may have been karmically connected or even not so connected. I have brought before you as an example of this the way in which we thus come gradually into association with such earth beings as are not today incorporated upon the earth, Brunetto Latini, Dante, Alanus ab Insulis, etc., by means of the fact that we proceed further in this state of consciousness. This state of consciousness is, therefore, a clarification, an illumination of the dream state. The dream state is, so to speak, the rudimentary basis in ordinary life for this state. Now, what is the difference between a man in the ordinary consciousness and an initiate? This difference you can clarify for yourselves very easily. When a man sleeps in the ordinary way, his physical body and his ether body are on the bed. He is outside of the physical and the ether body with his astral body and his ego. Now, only the ego experiences in dreams. It is true that the occurrences experienced in a dream are in the astral body, which is outside the physical and ether bodies, but as regards the ordinary consciousness, the ego alone is capable of experiencing anything in a dream. In the case of the initiate, the ego has the experience, but especially the astral body also. The distinction, then, between the ordinary dreamer and the initiate consists in the fact that the ordinary dreamer, when he is outside his physical and his ether body, experiences only in his ego, whereas the initiate experiences also in his astral body. Now, this way of perceiving was developed with great intensity, chiefly in the ancient mysteries, for the investigation of supersensible worlds. It was then still further elaborated in a rudimentary, decadent manner during the Middle Ages and in modern times, until it has very recently been more or less completely lost. Individual persons have always, by reason of the fact that they have, in some way, whether a spiritual way or through tradition, received information from the ancient teachers in the mysteries as to how the ordinary dream life is illuminated with consciousness. Individual persons have always possessed the possibility of penetrating into those worlds which can be entered in this way. A man is always in danger when he undertakes to enter these worlds, for the initiate immediately has the feeling in these worlds, when he dives down there by means of imaginative knowledge into that which is ordinarily filled by the dream, that he is losing the world, that he is entering with his consciousness, so to speak, into a void. He has always the feeling that his firm footing vanishes, that weight, gravity, vanishes. He feels that he is becoming inwardly light, that he is being borne away, regardless of his own will, into remote spaces of the spiritual world, that he may easily lose the mastery over himself because all gravity, all weight is vanishing. It is in order to prevent this that we have just those exercises described in my book Knowledge of the Higher Worlds and Its Attainment. Whoever devotes himself to these exercises in the right manner will discover that he becomes a being with winged soul, who can in a manner make use of wings of the soul when gravity and weight cease to exist. But just this is the perilous state when one loses one's footing, so to speak, as an initiate, and does not yet possess wings, when one loses the physical feet and the etheric feet, and still does not possess the wings of the astral body and the ego. You understand, if I describe this pictorially, what I mean by this, but it is just so. Through a painstaking and gradual growing by means of the exercises into the world which one there enters, every danger is naturally obviated. No danger can then intervene. A man can gradually grow into these worlds, just as he gradually grows into the ordinary physical world by means of a physical body and ether body. But this is actually the condition in which primeval humanity existed, more or less, by natural relationships. We must reach this state by means of exercises. Primeval humanity did not require this. Primeval humanity possessed natural aptitudes, by means of which there existed a constant condition that did not correspond to our waking state, but was a spiritual perception, as I have described this to you in the case of the Chaldeans, and also a state that did not correspond to our dream state, but was a perceiving in imagination. One man met another. He not only saw him in his physical outline, but he dreamed around him his aura. But this was the real aura, not one merely subjectively dreamt about him. Moreover, if he possessed this gift of perceiving the aura of an earthly man in the physical body, he had also the other capacity, for the two are bound up together, of perceiving the aura of a spiritual being that is not incarnated in a body. He then dreamt the form of this spiritual being. Note the difference. If one met a man in ancient times, an earthly man, one saw the earthly man and imagined around him in a real dream his aura. If one met a spiritual being, an angel or an elemental being, one saw first the aura in a spiritual way and dreamt the form belonging to it. It was in this way also that the primeval painters did their work, only this is no longer known. The primeval painters saw the spiritual beings, dreamt the corresponding forms, painted in rather human form the beings out of the hierarchy of the Angeloi. Let me read that again. The primeval painters saw the spiritual beings, dreamt the corresponding forms, painted in rather human form the beings out of the hierarchy of the Angeloi, painted with body merging into the background, but with clear wings and also with heads, the Archangeloi, and painted only the head, the winged head, because they dreamt this in the case of the Archai. All these things were quite natural, so to speak, in ancient man, the primeval man, just as it is natural for us today to see the noses and the eyes of other persons. Since these things have gradually been lost to human beings, they must be recovered again in our day by means of exercises. But since this realm belonged to primeval humanity, and since it was always comparatively easy to recover it by means of exercises, it has undergone much investigation in the course of time. Men have always investigated with great zeal the world that is ruled, so to speak, by the moon beings and the initiates of the ancient mysteries, who were the true investigators in this realm, have much to say of just this world, of their encounters with the dead after death, of research in the moon sphere. They then describe to us how the world looks from the moon sphere. Copernicus established his Copernican terrestrial system only from the point of view of the earth sphere. The ancient Ptolemaic system is not wrong, but is simply seen from the moon sphere, and there it is right. Now, one peculiarity is always to be found in these investigators. This is the fact that they never go farther than to this moon sphere. Just consider this. It is certainly known to almost all of you that what is called the Anthroposophical Society arose at first within the Theosophical Society. The Theosophical Society, which is a society similar to many of its kind that have arisen in the course of time, possesses a rich literature. If you read this literature, you will find that, rightly or wrongly, is not at present a matter of importance. The world is described of which I am now speaking, the world that is investigated with the moon beings, the world of the moon sphere. And it was a matter of some significance for me, a significance with which inconveniences were at first associated, when I received the invitation to work within the Theosophical Society. The significance of the situation lay in the fact that among all those who were in the Theosophical Society, I really found only such investigations and such literature as pertained to this moon sphere. There is certainly much that is erroneous, but much also that is extraordinarily significant, impressive, especially in the writings of Blavatsky. But all that is to be found in the writings of Blavatsky is such as it is because of the fact that she was in the very sphere which I have just described, and because she was in association with initiates who remained content in this moon sphere. Now, I have become acquainted, I can assure you, with many such initiates. I have learned to know how such minds penetrate into the moon sphere, and how uninterested they are if one wishes to go further. When, therefore, this happened, in the years 1906 to 1909, I described in my book Outline of Occult Science the earth in its earlier embodiment as moon, previously as sun, before that as Saturn. You observe that I did not halt with the moon embodiment, but proceeded further back all the way to Saturn. Whereas all initiates who have spoken of these things come to a halt between the moon and the sun, really going back only as far as the moon sphere. They became uninterested, even at times unhappy, if the demand was made upon them that they should penetrate further. This cannot be done, they said, for one arrives there at a boundary where there is a veil beyond which it is not possible to go. It was naturally exceedingly important and also interesting to see the reason of this. You must know that the reason lay in the fact that such initiates, this was at once noticeable when one became well acquainted with them, felt an antagonism and antipathy against the acquisition of those forms of concepts which relate to modern natural science. One might indeed become aware, if one confronted these initiates, with such concepts as exist in Darwinism, in Haeckelism, that they became thoroughly indignant, that they looked upon this as something childish and bungling on the part of modern men, as something with which they were unwilling to trouble themselves. if conditions of Goethe were brought to their attention, they were not at first so indignant, and yet they had the feeling that he also expressed himself as does a research scientist of modern times. They then brushed the thing aside. In short, it was not possible to reach these initiates by means of such concepts, and only when, parenthesis, in those years to which I have referred in this connection, 1906 to 1909, parenthesis, I simply impregnated my soul with modern natural scientific concepts in order to carry these into the region where otherwise the imaginations reside, was it possible for me to penetrate all the way to the sun and to Saturn, not employing these natural scientific concepts for the purpose of acquiring knowledge by means of them as Haeckel or Huxley acquired knowledge, but employing them as an inner activity in order to pass beyond that boundary which restricted the initiates in the period when a new natural scientific mode of thought did not yet exist, and one therefore entered into the higher consciousness only inwardly by impregnating the dream world with imaginations. In the composition, therefore, of my Outline of Occult Science, the endeavor was made to take hold inwardly of the entirely conscious conceptual world, which otherwise relates only to external natural objects, and to impregnate therewith the imaginative world. There resulted from this the possibility of entering into this entire chain, Saturn, Sun, Moon, and one thus arrived at the possibility of investigating on Earth what the ancient initiates also possessed. Observe that I am telling you of this way of knowledge, in order that you may see how such things take their course. You may say that this is something personal. In this case, however, the personal is indeed entirely objective. And when my Outline of Occult Science has been criticized, it has been on the ground that it is written like a mathematical textbook, that it did not seek to introduce anything subjective, but described in a cold, mathematical fashion this entire journey of which I have just told you. This journey has come about by reason of the fact that the element has been brought in which is found in the mode of thinking existent since Copernicus and Galileo, and which has been so greatly deepened by Goethe, that by introducing this mode of thinking into the same mood of soul in which one lives otherwise in connection with imagination, it was possible to bring in that region which has always been accessible to initiates, even up to our day, in earlier times, up to the present. You may thus see, perhaps, through this example, how important it is to proceed in these things not in a nebulous manner, but with complete clarity and circumspection, to introduce circumspection just where otherwise insensibility so easily begins. We have, then, an example here of the way in which the dream life, which otherwise lays hold of the ego alone, lays hold also of the astral body. And to the question, wherein consists, then, the distinction between modern natural science and what I have given in my book Outline of Occult Science? I might answer, the distinction consists in the fact that the modern thinker about nature can have recourse to his ego alone, that he enters into dreams as soon as he passes out of his ego, whereas I could say to the astral body what the scientific investigator has as concepts, so that the astral body could thereby enter into the world I had to describe. This is a path that can be described to you with complete accuracy, and which may, perhaps, as an instance, as an example, show you much more adequately than could anything else what is the character of the right paths as contrasted with the wrong. Now, the condition polarically opposite to the dream state is the state of somnambulism or mediumism. The dreamer lives wholly in his ego and astral body, even though he has no conscious perceptions in his astral body, still he lives in it. The dreamer lives wholly in his ego and in his astral body, outside his physical and ether bodies. He is immersed, submerged in his own being, and from his own being outward in worlds, since his own being is connected with worlds. The dreamer then dives down, so to speak, into his own being and thereby into the world, and to a certain extent into the physical organism. The exact opposite is true of the medium and the somnambulist. One is likewise in a state of somnambulism or mediumism only when one is outside the physical and the ether body with the ego and the astral body. But in this case, as I explained to you yesterday, the ego and the astral body are pervaded by an alien being. Thus we have the medium, or the somnambulist, here, with his physical being. But outside the physical body and the ether body are the ego and the astral body. Here the ego is suppressed, enslaved, and the astral body as well, for another being dwells within them, as I explained yesterday. But the medium is in this way prevented also from working back in the right manner upon the physical and ether bodies. For even when we are asleep, for example, in dreamless sleep, we work back upon the physical and the ether body. In the waking state, we pervade the physical and the ether body in a certain sense from within. In the sleeping state, we protect them from without. This ceases in the case of the somnambulist. The medium, the somnambulist, cannot give any attention to their physical and ether bodies. These are, so to speak, an abandoned region. This is the peculiarity of the medium, of the somnambulist, that the physical and ether bodies are an abandoned region. When we observe a person who has the normal state of soul for our present human epoch, only the forces of the minerals and the plants have an influence upon his physical and ether bodies. Nothing else except the forces of the mineral and the plants. If the forces of the minerals, and therefore also of the mineral element of the earth, did not work upon our physical body, we could not walk. We could make no movements, for these are the forces, the physical forces, that we employ. Into these we are permitted to enter. This is the normal state. But this must not enter into the ether body. So it is also in regard to the plants. It is permissible that they should work in a certain sense upon the ether body, but not too intensely. Not the same forces, however, that make animals sentient beings, nor must the forces of another person influence the physical body of a man, and especially not the ether body. Since the physical body and the ether body in the case of the medium and the somnambulist are abandoned, the animal and earthly human forces work upon the somnambulist and the medium. They are influenced suggestively. Just as thought sinks down out of the dream, so also does the will sink down out of the human being into his environment. Thus we can suggest to the somnambulist, to the medium, that he ought to walk. We can suggest to him when we give him a potato that it is a delicious pear, etc. As human beings, we can come suggestively into direct contact with mediums and somnambulists as regards their physical body and thereby also their ether body. Moreover, the somnambulist and the medium carry their physical environment within themselves in their ether body, though they ought to bear this only in the physical body, as is the case with normal men. Thus the normal man is surrendered in dreams to the inner spiritual world. And similarly, the somnambulist, the medium, is surrendered to external natural worlds. This again is a normal condition, this being mediumistic, somnambulistic, provided indeed it is normal. For the fact that we walk, that we take hold of something, that we can do anything whatever in space, in every human being, this is a magical somnambulistic accomplishment. Only it must not pass over into the ether body. It must remain in the physical body alone. Everywhere, the normal passes over into the abnormal. Thus, you see, the dreamer is really entirely within himself, but the medium and the somnambulist entirely outside themselves. And in the case of the medium and the somnambulist, we have the physical body and ether body of the human being before us as automata, in a sense. We can influence these because they are not cared for by their own ego and their own astral body. As in the case of the dreamer, an inner spiritual world is brought into existence, so the somnambulist and the medium establish in this way a union with the external world of nature, with the world of the formative processes, with the world of form genesis, with all that is visible, that is spatial, that is temporal. When a person plunges into the dream world, he plunges into that which is formless, into the eternally self-metamorphosing. When a man enters into the world in which the somnambulist exercises his will under a suggestive influence, that is, when his physical body and ether body penetrate into that world, everything is there definite, clearly outlined. Everything that happens because of an external influence is really carried out with the most tremendous exactitude. This is the world diametrically opposite to the world of dreams. It is, in a fashion, a dream that is realized, externalized, set forth in a naturalistic manner, where one dreams in action instead of dreaming, as is usual, only in inner experience. This contrast is also significant and of the highest interest when it is viewed from the initiate standpoint. As I have said to you, the initiate has his difficulties when he plunges down into the dream world in order to permeate this imaginatively. He has his difficulties because he has the feeling that gravity vanishes, that weight vanishes, that everything belonging to the external world which gives him a firm footing is vanishing. When the initiate accustoms himself, and he must consciously accustom himself, he must develop a consciousness for this. So, to pass out into the world as the somnambulist passes out unconsciously, he then has the feeling that he may become unconscious at any moment, that he may lose consciousness. This is indeed the condition, this continuous liability, that one may lose consciousness. We are under the constant necessity of keeping a firm, tense hold upon ourselves, in order that we may not really lose consciousness. What I wish to say is this. If a man goes forth into this world, he must then, as an initiate, move about in this world just as rationally as ordinarily rational, sensible people move about in our world. Let me say that you must not suppose, in regard to an initiate, that while he is moving about among men and animals and stones, he is at the same time in a spiritual world, wherein he stands in full consciousness. For should he suppose even for a moment that he had no feet, but was flying through this world, it would then be exceedingly easy for him to fall into all sorts of conduct, whereby he would prove to be dangerous to his fellow men. They would say, quote, "What sort of crazy fellow is this?" Unquote. This may happen if he does not inwardly keep a firm and tense hold upon himself, in order that he may maintain full consciousness in passing through the spiritual world, which is everywhere present, just as is the physical world of the senses. Observe that a realm is here opened, which again has not become the domain, so to speak, of the Theosophical Society, but one over which certain research scientists of a higher sort have set themselves, a realm that is called the realm of psychical investigation, psychical research, etc. It is a realm where those persons who have previously had scientific training, but have not been able to achieve as much in science, prepare statistical documents in regard to such things, make experiments with mediums in order to arrive at an understanding as to how things are in the spiritual world. Here there has been created in all sorts of societies and from all sorts of standpoints a realm in which it is proposed to investigate from without how things go when a man is moving his limbs or managing himself, not with his ordinary consciousness, but with a lowered or entirely extinguished consciousness, where other beings have taken possession of his soul. Here a record is made of what other persons do in whom consciousness is thus suppressed. We have even had the experience that persons enthusiastic about this sort of research have demanded that I, myself, with all that I have to say to the world, should betake myself to their laboratories, in order that they may thus investigate from without, in this case, also, what is going on, what sort of inner world there is in process. What sort of inner world is there in process? This is just about as intelligent as if someone should come and say, quote, "I understand nothing whatever of mathematics, and I cannot say, therefore, whether what the mathematician maintains is true or false, but he ought to come to me in my physical laboratory, and I will then make experiments on him and test whether he is a great mathematician," unquote. It is approximately like that. Here, therefore, I am pointing out to you a contemporary domain where it is proposed to investigate also the world of the somnambulist, of the mediumistic, from without, by means of a caricature of natural scientific methods, where it is not proposed that one should really enter the inner. For if anyone went into the inner, he would see that in a medium and a somnambulist he has before him something external, an automaton of the physical and ether bodies, and that it is not, therefore, really the spiritual which is being investigated, but that the very thing men propose to investigate has abandoned what they have before them. It is just these more subtle peculiarities of the spiritual world that men will not look into. Very generally, they do not wish to have the spiritual before them only in inner experiences, but in external vision. They wish to have the spiritual before them in external, visible, sensible activity. This often comes to light in still other ways. This comes out in the fact that such things happen as actually did happen in the Theosophical Society somewhat later, at the very time when I myself trod this path and set it forth accordingly. In the fact that the spiritual form of Christ was sought in a physical personality, men desired to find in the external physical world something actually spiritual. We must let the physical world remain a physical world and seek the spiritual where it is. There also, to be sure, where the physical world is, but in those spheres which pervade the physical world and which are themselves spiritual. But here lies still another realm. A human being in a sound condition feels himself called upon to throw a bridge over from one realm to the other, to connect the realm of inner experience and that of external perception. The world in which the dreamer exists in an abnormal way and the world in which the medium or the somnambulist exists in an abnormal way. If we bring the two worlds together and they mutually fructify one another, then art comes into existence. For in art, that which is perceptible externally through the senses becomes permeated with spirit, shot through by the impulses of the spiritual world. That which is perceptible inwardly to the soul is set forth in an external embodiment. While, therefore, the Theosophical Society was occupied in setting up an external physical being as a spiritual being, we in the Anthroposophical Society felt impelled to cause the stream, the occult stream, to flow into art. The mystery plays arose. Eurythmy arose. Speech formation was developed. All which then arose in the Anthroposophical movement arose out of this impulse to throw a bridge across from the spiritual to the physical, so that there might be a play of consciousness from the world that the dreamer treads in a chaotic manner to the world that the somnambulist or the medium treads in a chaotic manner. In art, both of these are consciously blended. And the time will come when this will be perceived. Men will come to see what our purpose is. That, for example, by means of these special endeavors, speech formation, as this is practiced by Marie Steiner, shall again be conducted back to that rank which it once possessed when men were still spiritual by instinct, rhythm and measure then counted for more in speech than external abstract verbal expression. This must again be recovered. And in eurythmy we shall again recover the mobile man evolving before us as man is in his soul and spirit being. It is this that you see in eurythmy. And so we had first in the form of art to throw a bridge from the world the dreamer brushes against to the world in which the somnambulist, the medium, stumble around, move about clumsily. In our present materialistic age, the dreamer stands there alone, musing, and knows nothing of formations, of those material forms which express and reveal the spiritual. And the somnambulists move about indifferent as to whether they are honored as mediums or whether in Bolshevism they formulate pure theories of the state and, like the mediums, bring all sorts of things to realization in the world. These move about in the contemporary world and have no premonition whatever of the spiritual. This is the essential thing, that a bridge may be found again from spirit to matter, from matter to spirit. In the element of art, what one has to do primarily is to throw this bridge across, not any longer merely to stumble about and hobble around in the external world, but to gain a sense for that world by means of spiritual movements, which are other than the ordinary. Thus you see the true, the inner beginning of the eurythmic as an initiation impulse, and everything that is practiced among us as an art in speech formation has arisen also from this impulse. And when a course of lectures dealing with dramatic art shall be given in Dornach in the near future, the endeavor will be made to lead the art of the theater also back to a point where there shall be something spiritual on the stage. For a long time men have been considering merely how the actor may appear upon the stage as nearly as possible as he appears in ordinary life. The discussions that went on during the 90s were merely comical, when people argued and finally decided in favor of the naturalistic as to whether persons in Schiller's plays should utter their heroic lines on the stage with their hands in their trouser pockets, since that was once the mode. You see, there is abundance of reason for finding the way to a true investigation of the spiritual world, and the way that lies open before us in the realm of art is really not an altogether erroneous way. If, therefore, it was a matter of very special significance to advance beyond the ancient initiate knowledge, which had immersed itself in the mysteries of the moon and all that pertains to these, to advance further to what can be entered into only when that state of the soul, which is capable of occult knowledge, is impregnated with the achievements of natural science, parenthesis, but I mean now those achievements having to do with the soul, parenthesis, if this was of enormous significance, it was no less significant, on the other hand, that the unclarified dilettante endeavors that the unclarified dilettante endeavors that are made to ascertain what in the case of the somnambulist and the medium is moving in the forms of the spiritual and under spiritual influences, although after the spirit has departed from them, no less important was it to make of this also a special field of research. For these two ways must really be looked upon as one and the same, the breaking through from within outward by means of the clarified dream world, and the conscious comprehension of the external world, which is conceived by natural science only with respect to its mineral characteristic, and which the so-called psychical investigation, psychical research, and the like, undertake to investigate in a dilettante fashion. It is a matter of importance, since we are living in a natural scientific age, that we should tread also this path of spiritual research, that we should investigate spiritually also that other realm, diametrically opposite to the realm of dreams. When we have before us the somnambulist, a medium, what then occurs by means of the somnambulist and the medium is not something, indeed, to which we are accustomed in ordinary life. The somnambulist does not write as an ordinary man writes, does not move himself as an ordinary man moves himself, does not speak as an ordinary man speaks, does not taste as an ordinary man tastes, because the astral body and the ego are outside the physical and ether bodies. And we have to do with a physical body and ether body that are abandoned, and now stand subject to the influence of the cosmos, surrendered to the influence of the cosmos. We have to do, therefore, with manifestations of the physical and the etheric that are not ordinary effects of nature, but proceed from the spiritual world. For after all, it is one and the same thing in principle, whether I stand before a medium and suggest something to him, or the medium is surrendered to some influence of the stars and takes this up in the ether body, or to a climatic influence, or the influence of a metal, etc. We have before us in the medium an organization that is surrendered in magical fashion to the spiritual. We must hold this clearly in mind. Unless, therefore, one already knows the spiritual, it is not possible to study these effects as societies for external psychical research would like to do, those that undertake to experiment in an external manner with these things. Here it is necessary to have a perception of the spiritual interrelationship. Here it is necessary to have as a foreground what is occurring through the medium or the somnambulist or otherwise through the human being, and to see in the background what is present as something spiritual. But all these effects which come to manifestation in the medium, which come to manifestation in the somnambulist, are akin to other mediums. When you have a medium sitting here, and in a certain definite state, he performs this or that under human influences or cosmic influences, that is to say, really, when a physical body and an astral body here perform this or that, this is transiently, temporarily, exactly the same thing as that which is determined and produced through something else in the poisonous plants by reason of which man is made ill in a certain fashion. What comes to manifestation, I might say, in the somnambulist, in the mediumistic state, is merely the external transient mask of illness. And from a certain point of view, which will be discussed still further in the next lectures, from a certain point of view, one may perceive in the manifestations of mediumism, in the manifestations of somnambulism, it is not necessary, but one may do this, one may see again what really lies before us in a sick person, in the fact that this person's ego and his astral body is in some abnormal fashion or other drawn out of some one of his organs or from his entire organism, and he has thus come under special spiritual influences. Bear in mind that because it was perceived in ancient times that this interrelationship existed, the mysteries were always bound up with the medical sphere. And since men were not then so inquisitive as we are today, they did not therefore occupy themselves very much in dealing with mediums and somnambulists, whose operations were looked upon in the same manner as men looked upon a state of illness. Men then dealt with these things more from the point of view derived from medicine, and this was a standpoint which must again be recovered. And that which enters into the spiritual in dilettante fashion as the other path through the phenomena of nature, the other way which is then traversed in dilettante fashion, must be followed in a right manner. What is in the world and manifests itself especially through the pathological states of men and animals must be followed in a right way once more. Only thus shall we attain to the ability to investigate what the Society for Psychical Research would like to investigate. And this path also has now been trod within the sphere of the anthroposophical movement. This has been rendered possible by reason of the fact that pathological manifestations may be followed in such a way that an access into the spiritual world may be afforded through them. This has become possible by reason of the fact that in the joint work of Dr. Ida Wegmann and myself, an effort will be made to follow in the right manner this way which is missed in psychical researches. This is possible because this joint work has resulted from the fact that in Ida Wegmann there are really present not only those forms of knowledge acquired by the present-day physician, but also those intuitively therapeutic impulses which pass directly from the picture of the illness into the spiritual world and thence arrive at therapy. But here lies the path for the investigation of the realm to which I am referring. And so the endeavor will here be made by means of this work to develop true initiated medicine, which is in itself initiated natural science. In this manner also will the other true way, in contrast to the false way, be set before the world. Even in the first volume of the book that will be written by Frau Dr. Wegmann and myself, it will be seen how this path must be trod. You see how very easy it is, by means of examples, to show how the right ways are distinguished from the false, from the erroneous ways. In regard to this also it may be permissible to say something in this connection. When I said previously that a way must be opened into art that will again bring together the realm of the spiritual and the realm of material forms, I must say that it seems, according to the requirements of contemporary civilization, to be perfectly obvious that we shall find the right way thereto only when we tread this way in respect to natural phenomena. For in the element of art, humanity is today so remote from that throwing over of a bridge of which I have spoken, that it may not be possible to convince men of the weaving and living of the spiritual in art until they can first be convinced in that intensive fashion of the working of the spiritual which can be perceived especially in the genesis of the pathological. Until it shall have become obvious that the spirit weaves and lives in matter, that it manifests itself in matter. When this shall have been perceived in the realm of nature, enthusiasm may then perhaps be awakened also, full enthusiasm, for placing this directly before the world in art. The end of Lecture 9.